This message was brought to you by Fortress Bank. Providing a banker's expertise with a business owner's perspective is what makes Fortress the business bank of choice. Find out more about their love of growing businesses at www.bankfortress.com. The amazing Helen Keller once said, "The only thing worse than being blind is having sight but no vision." Welcome to the What's Your Vision podcast, where we talk to the best of the Midwest, innovators, and entrepreneurs. My name is Elise Billany, a bank and finance marketer with a side hustle small business that was featured on ABC's Shark Tank. Each episode, you'll hear the real-life journeys of Midwestern entrepreneurs and how they turn their visions into reality. In this edition of Big Vision, I will be joined by my co-host Gabe Wells, commercial lender and small business advocate. We will be chatting with Scott Osell, franchise owner of Domino's. Scott started out slinging pizzas and now owns several Domino's franchises. His journey is one of grit, determination, and dough. Now let's find out how Scott put all the right toppings on his vision. All right, thank you so much, Scott, for joining us. So let's start from the beginning. How did you get started?
Well, actually, it's kind of funny. Back when I was 18 years old, flipping burgers was kind of the most common thing for people to do is go work at McDonald's. And my buddy's just like, "Hey, we don't want to smell like greasy burgers. Let's let's go throw some pizzas." So back then, it was okay to throw the pizza in the air. And
did you really actually throw it in the air?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we used to throw them in the air.
Did you ever drop them?
Sure.
Not to sidetrack us this early, but if you dropped them,
just trash them.
Yeah, okay.
The dough ball's pretty cheap. It's just trash it. Okay. It's nothing like there was like 400 dough balls behind it. Yeah. So it wasn't like it was any like big deal to drop one.
Okay.
And some of the fun things we wanted to do is when we were just having fun, we'd take dough balls and see how big we could stretch it, 3 feet, 4 feet,
So you'd just be left to your own devices back there, stretching the dough.
Just throw them up in the air and see until you could actually, until it ripped open. So yeah, paper thin and just huge, it was fun. It was a fun thing. And I actually moved to Minneapolis at that time because my mom had moved to Texas. And
how old were you, by the way,
Scott? 18.
Okay, 18.
And so it was kind of interesting is that I had my senior year, and ironically, both my older siblings, their senior year, they got moved from a high school they were in to a new one. So it's always not a fun thing to move to a new high school your senior year, but didn't really know many people. I knew more people in Minneapolis than I would have had. I moved to Texas because I lived in Buffalo, Minnesota, which is like an hour away from Minneapolis. And my dad was there. So went to school there. And I knew that college wasn't going to be something I wanted to go directly into. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And so ironically, as my senior year, I took an on-the-job class at Domino's. So then I could get out of school a little bit early. I actually went over there at the time and would go over there and prep their pan pizzas for them for their dinner rush. So little did I know that on the job was actually going to lead to a career, but it's kind of crazy. So a lot of Domino's guys start out as a driver.
Okay.
Believe it or not, back in the day, the drivers ended up becoming managers because if you got a DWI, you could no longer deliver pizzas. Mm-hmm. So then they loved the job and they decided they would go be management. So then a lot of them is...
Oh,
Is that how that, seriously?
Yeah. So, I mean, it says 90% of Domino's franchisees started as drivers.
Because
drivers made a lot of money and the management did okay, but not as good as the drivers because you're getting tips and stuff.
Sure.
And so in my opinion, and it's not a fact, but in my opinion, I had seen a lot of people that, you know, maybe had something on their record or the too many speeding tickets, or it didn't have to be a DWI.
Something where they couldn't drive.
Yeah. Something that took them away from delivering and decided that, hey, you know what? Or, you know, it could have been just the love of the job and they wanted to go somewhere with it.
What is that? Like, is there a culture at Domino's that people just really loved, or explain that a little bit?
You know, they say it's like having sauce in your veins, you know,
okay.
it's a very fast paced job. You know, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's a fun job. You know, I was just talking to my son about this last week and I said, Alex, I said, can you imagine how many people you fed this last Friday? Because our competition was shut down for the day and actually been shut down for more than that day. But I said, think about how many people you satisfied by making great product that day. And he's like, I don't think of it that way. And I said, you kind of need to. You kind of need to personalize it that you're feeding a bunch of people. And how many, and it took a while for me to actually feel that way too. It was just making pizzas. It kind of like left the place. So you don't really see like that you're feeding the people. It's because back then when I started, it was 95% delivery, you know, and today it's 40 to 50% pickup. So, you know, we're actually seeing our customers more than we ever have. But I think that goes from Domino's being creative to stay ahead of the competition. Mm-hmm. They saw that there was a market for pickup. And so that they really marketed for people that want to come pick it up, mm-hmm. you know? And so, it's something that they've really, you know, are ahead of the curve. You go into our place and it's full of TVs. The technology is unbelievable. I wouldn't ever have dreamt that Domino's would be such a technology company in the aspect that what we can do to get a pizza to a customer's house literally in 10 minutes and still cook a pizza in 7 minutes, you know, with what they decide they want on it. It's the technology is amazing and they want to stay ahead of the competition and they definitely have. So I
do want to hit on the franchise part of this because this is very interesting, right? What they implement, but let's go back just a little bit. So you started as a pizza slinger.
Yep.
Right? And then driver, I assume.
So I basically, after high school, really was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I decided, my mom said, hey, you want to come down and live with us? And you can go to college and, you know, stay with us. And so I moved to Texas and I worked at a Domino's there as an insider. And basically was kind of running the whole show by myself, making like $4 an hour. And I said to him, I said, you know, after being there for, you know, a little while, I said, you know, a couple of months, I said, can I get a raise? I mean, I'm literally running this from like 8 o'clock till midnight every night. And you're just sitting and I didn't say sitting in the office, but he literally was. And I'm like, can I get a little bit more money? Cause I'm like running this place. He's like, we can't really help you out. And I'm like, okay. So at that point, I decided that I was going to do something different. So okay. I got a job at the country club where my parents belonged at the time. And I loved to play golf and tennis. So I was like, hey, you know, I'll just go play golf and tennis and work in the country club, you know, at the pro shop. And so that's what I did for about a year and a half. And then I did take one semester of college. Realize it wasn't going to be for me. I was still kind of dating my girlfriend at the time, long distance, and it really wasn't working out too well. But after about 2 years, I decided that it was time for me to kind of go back to Minnesota and be with her a little bit more so. And so I got a job at Subway doing a job and just kind of running their night shifts for them. And my uncle called me up one day and he's like, hey, we really need drivers at Domino's and the money's really good. And I'm like, well, I don't really have a car. I mean, I do, but it's the size of a boat, so it's really not going to work. And so I was able to get a car, really kind of a piece of junk. And but it worked, you know, and I got back into it. So delivering back in 92. And
what did your uncle do at Domino's?
He was a delivery driver.
Okay.
And so they kind of found out that I knew how to make pizzas too. So kind of roped me into.
You were a jack of all trades.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of roped me into doing a little bit more. And during that time, I decided that I had this big aspiration to be a sports broadcaster. So so I actually went to Brown Institute, which is like a place that people go to get like certificate for broadcasting. So I went there for 18 months. I was still delivering pizzas. I was doing an internship for the radio station up there. After I got done, they're like, well, Mr. Oso, you really don't necessarily have the voice we're looking for.
They said you don't have the voice we're looking for?
Yes. So you're probably going to have a hard time getting a job, making a lot of money doing this business. I'm like, thanks for taking my money and telling me that now. So,
wow.
Yeah.
What are they like a deeper voice?
Yeah, or? I think it's one of those raspy. You know, it's funny because a lot of the classmates I went to school with all went on to go smoke. And it's funny because there is a lot of broadcasters that smoke. They have that raspy voice.
Yes.
And so I'm like, maybe I start need to start smoking. I don't know.
No,
but
I
didn't. So it was something I did and I enjoyed it. But I'm like, you know what? I decided I'd move up a little bit further and I got married. I told my wife, I said, you know what? I've been kind of bouncing around from job to job. I shouldn't say job to job, but I really wasn't really buckled down and was 24 years old. And I'm like, hey, you know what? 23, almost 24. And I'm like, when we get married, I said, I'll take care of you. You know, you don't have to worry about it. And so kind of kept that promise. You know, when we got married, I just basically buckled down, decided to be a GM and I got a 3-day crash course. I'm like, I never closed at night. He's like, well, just come down here and I'll teach you.
So this was a GM at Domino's?
Yes, GM for Domino's. I actually was kind of, once again, I was kind of pushed too because I was delivering, but I was working inside during the day, making pizzas during the day and then delivered, you know, through dinner rush. And I lived in Minneapolis. I lived like literally like an hour away. I lived in White Bear Lake, which is completely on the west east side of town of Minneapolis, and I was working in Lake Minnetonka, which was completely, it was a long drive. And I hustled really, you know, when I got in and out of my deliveries. I was the type of driver that literally ran to the customer's door. I knew that the second they hear that door slam, that they're waiting for their food. So my goal was to run it up there. Every time I got in and out, I ran.
You were like the guy on Home Alone where he hits the.
I had bought a new car to deliver in, and it was a convertible. And one day I got out, ran up to the thing. It was a secured apartment complex, and I just pulled in the little place where it's, you know, not parking for fire. All of a sudden, I see these lights in the back and I'm like, oh goodness, don't tell me there's a cop pulling up to, you know, give me a ticket. And I turn around real quick and I look and I see my car driving, going backwards.
No.
It's going backwards.
Your new convertible. Yes. Oh no.
It's going backwards. I'm on the phone with the customer. I hang up because they're going to buzz me in. I hang up and I see my car literally heading towards an underground garage. And I'm thinking, there's cars parked on both sides and it's missing all these cars. And I run out, I throw the pizza and I go running after my car. And I'm like, please just do not have somebody coming out of that garage because they're going to get hit really hard.
Yeah.
I'm trying to catch up to my car. That's a good, you know, 100 yards ahead of me. And all of a sudden I hear this bang and I'm expecting the garage door to just go flying down. I'm like, what's going on? And I keep running towards it and I hear bang again. And I get down there and it literally hit the pole next to the keypad.
Oh.
And my
car.
That
was lucky, I feel like, maybe.
I mean, I looked at my trunk. I had golf clubs in there. And my trunk looked like a triangle had hit it.
Oh, no.
So my trunk was completely collapsed in.
Oh, no.
And all the people are coming out because they hear this bang and they're like, what happened? I'm like, oh gosh, you know, how do I explain this one? I mean, for whatever reason, it never hit anything. There was a crossing where cars drove in and out of this complex.
Wow.
Missed all these cars that were parked, hit that. I didn't even as much leave a red, my car was red. Did not even leave a red speck of paint on that pole. No damage whatsoever to anything.
There. Wow.
And
that's incredible, really, when you think about it. Oh, did your golf clubs look like boomerangs after that?
They actually survived because there was some room. And then I called my father-in-law and I said, you know, I got an hour drive to home.
Yeah.
Is this safe to drive?
Yeah,
because, I mean, right. This thing was just like rattling all over the place now. And he's like, well, is it dripping any fluids or anything? I'm like, no, it seems to be fine. So I drove it home that night. And the very next day, I called the insurance company. I, you know, told them I, you know, got in an accident or, you know, the car kind of got in an accident. I'll never forget this. I drive it in there and I had two people looking at it. And all of a sudden, they start laughing.
Really?
And I'm like, what's so funny? And they're like, we don't ever see cars that look this bad drive into here.
Is it like a State Farm commercial where they're like, we've seen it all?
So I'm like, okay, well, I mean, I bought the car for like $10,500 back in the day and it was brand new and it did $8,000 worth of damage and they never totaled it.
Oh,
they just
man.
Gave me the thing. It never drove the same. So the owner caught wind that, you know, it had happened. And that's when he said, come down and we'll teach you how to run this place. And
so this is the owner of Domino's.
Yeah, at the time he had like six stores at the time.
Okay.
And he knew me, you know, a little bit. You know, we had some interactions, didn't know me really well. But he's like, I'll let you use my Jeep to drive back and forth to work. Just come on down here and we'll get you trained in. And Monday morning you can take over the store. And so I did that. And I just remember being really nervous, thinking, gosh, I didn't even know how to do the paperwork, you know? I did this crash course with him for 3 days. And the rest is kind of history from there.
You became a GM.
Yep, back in 94.
Then where was the transition to ownership? How did that happen?
So it's kind of interesting. So he had just purchased these stores about a year prior. And the old owner, whatever reason, didn't have his mail forwarded. So he'd always come in and he's like, hey, how's it going? And I'm working like 80 hours a week and getting paid like hardly anything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I go, this is a lot harder than I thought. I didn't realize I was going to work 80 hours a week and, you know, make like $4 an hour as a manager and this and that. And he's like, yeah, you know, you probably deserve to make a little bit more than that. And then about a day later, somebody came in and said, we're demoting you. And I think what happened from what I later found out is the owner had talked to my owner and said, you know, your GM was pretty upset about how much money he's making and was talking to me. And I'm like, I didn't really think that was all that fair because I was talking to him. He asked the questions. Well, actually, then I got demoted, ended up going to a store closer to my house. And, actually, the very same day that the Oklahoma City bombing happened is I took over general managing a new location after being demoted and then kind of getting promoted again to the highest volume store in his out of his package and did that from that day until basically September of 2000. I purchased the store in Davenport.
Wow. So how did, I mean... Because walk me through that, because people, I mean, I'm sure there are people that'll listen that'll be like, okay, I'm in a position and, you know, how do you go from manager to owner?
So what's really nice about Domino's is they really want to give the person that's working, that knows the job, the ability to franchise.
Okay.
So if you have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, you cannot open a Domino's pizza store.
Really?
No.
Okay.
It only is given to you as a general manager or an existing franchisee. So the problem was, is that the franchisee I worked for was trying to grow his company, and everything that became available in Minnesota, he would gobble it up.
Yeah.
So when I was 28 and a half, I said to him, hey, I really like working for you. Him and I became really good friends. And I said, but either I want to be a supervisor, I said, or I want to be a franchisee, or I'm going to be out of Domino's by age 30. I'm giving you, time to determine what you want to do at this point. Cause you know, I've been doing it for about 3 years as a manager, and I'm like, I could probably do the same thing as for myself owning it. And so at around, I would say 99, well, right around the beginning of 2000, I realized it wasn't going to happen. And, you know, I set a goal for myself of age 30, and I have to, you know, pat myself a little bit on the back. I was able to almost achieve that goal, but I did buy my first store 2 weeks after I turned 30. So it wasn't too
You're
bad.
Still 30.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. Yeah, yeah. And you know, I obviously moved from Minneapolis down to Davenport. It was big because I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, basically.
That's huge. Oh, that's wow. That's a huge move.
And, you know, my wife was moving away from her family. We had no family here. So, Domino's has like what they call a store for sale list. It's kind of an internal thing. So any store that are available, it's listed on there. It tells you like what their current sales are, what the asking price is, and this and that. So, I went down there and met with the guy and asked him a bunch of questions about the store. He owned the Davenport and the Bettendorf store at the time. And
did you just save up enough money? I assume you have to have some sort of down payment, right?
That's pretty tricky because, back in 2000, you know, I didn't have any college debt, but the way I looked at it as, we had bought a house that I was making payments on. The market was really booming at the time, so I got a lot more for my house. I took that money and put it towards a house down here. And I just said to my wife, hey, we're going to live on X amount of money for the next 2 years. It's less than I'm making now, but I said, let's just plan on that, you know? And so that was kind of the plan. And I was able to have her parents, they helped give us some money. The bank back then, interest rates were about 8%, and they gave me a loan for like $300,000. And I think my rates were like 13%.
Wow.
Excuse me. And, then he subordinated some of the debt, the guy that sold me it. So I had to pay him, the bank, and actually my sister was a partner with me, 15%. She also coughed up some money. So I had a little bit of assistance between my sister, my in-laws, and then him subordinating some of the debt. So all that worked together and to buy it. So unfortunately, as they say in your franchise classes, make sure you do your due diligence when you buy a store. I had came down with a guy that was a good buddy of mine. We were looking at it. Biggest thing back then, there was no GPS. Okay. 2000, you were looking at roadmaps. And we said, hey, Domino's, we know has territories. You have to stay in your territory. You can't. And we said, hey, are you delivering pizzas outside your territory? Oh, no, I'm not. And so we asked him 4 or 5 times for sure, you know. Yeah. And short of taking like hundreds of pages of addresses that you'd have to plot
to map
on a map, you know,
sure, yeah.
We, you know, nowadays it'd be a lot easier.
Yeah, you just type it in.
Sure.
And, yeah.
And see where it's at. And we'd still take some time, but at least much quicker. Yeah. And so I bought the store in September of 2000. And I remember him coming over that week and he says to me, he says, hey, do you have any food to sell? And I was like, yeah, because my sales weren't where I anticipated them with my food order. And came over and I go, gosh, I said, my sales are down at least 15%. He says, that's because I took them when I opened up the, you know, when I started working at the Bettendorf store. I'm like, okay, something isn't right. Mm-hmm. And
so you just bought one store at a time, just to confirm, right? You just bought the Davenport.
Yeah, okay. The Davenport location. Right. And I'm like, the bank thought I was going to be doing like $18,000. That's what I got the loan based on. And my first week was like $12,000. And I'm like, okay, this isn't going too well because, yeah, that's a pretty nerve-wracking thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I called my buddy and I'm like, yeah, he just told me that he's taking like 15% of the sales because, yeah.
And then you took all the loans and that. Oh my gosh, yeah.
So I knew the system well enough. I mean, I knew the system. The guy I worked for always made us run very tight numbers, food and labor numbers, which is the most important thing in most fast food restaurants. And so I knew how to do that. I knew how to work and make pizzas fast. And so I'm like, I can make this work. It's going to be hard. It's going to be a lot of work. But I eventually did. You know, I was able to, unfortunately, I did file a lawsuit against him. And because, like I said, my buddy and I knew that we'd asked him. I was doing my homework and I made sure that he was telling us what actually happened, which didn't happen. And so it was, you know, here's me thinking, how am I going to make this work? And
it never goes as planned, does it?
No.
No.
No. But, you know, and like I said, I moved to Davenport, upward everything. And eventually I had some really good things fall into place for me. Like in September, we had like a really cold spell. We had snow. We had all kinds of stuff that make people want to order from us instead of
and
going
not get out. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So remember, the worse the weather for us,
the better.
The better.
Yeah.
I mean, all these other places, their ghost town, Subway, everybody else, hey, let's close down early because nobody's going to come out.
Yeah.
So I had some really fortunate luck, you know, to fall into my lap to actually help me increase my sales. And back then it was called a mega market. This Davenport market was basically he was doing any pizza, any size, any toppings for $9.99. And that was kind of common back then for Domino's to do that and basically have markets where you really are aggressive with your pizza pricing. And so it's what something that we had. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, obviously you get aggressive with it. Does it really affect your margins? Are your margins?
Oh, for sure it does. Yeah, because I mean, everybody and their uncle are going to want to have like 25 toppings on the pizza.
Right.
Although anything over 9 toppings, we still say today, you know, because we use a conveyor oven, goes through 7 minutes and anything, you know, you start getting it too thick, it's just not going to cook right. So we try and tell people, hey, you know what, just keep it to 9 toppings. So what I did is I basically, which is kind of dangerous, but after like 3 months, I went down to 5 toppings. Then another 3 months later, I went down to 3 toppings. So slowly I weaned them off of, still price point was the same, but the number of ingredients they could get on the pizza was less. Well, that helped the margins too, obviously.
Absolutely.
For sure. And then I decided back in 2001 that I wanted to open a store in Muscatine because it had burnt down. And
we didn't see the air quotes on the podcast. Yeah.
It got burnt down because it was doing probably very low sales. And so I decided that I'd call my old boss and I said, hey, you have some equipment for me to buy? I went in there, kind of learned how to build a store. And I went in there and kind of built a store. My sales had started going up in the original store. So
in Davenport.
Yeah, in Davenport. So I'm like, oh, let's just try and open another one. And we're like, hey, you know, if we can open it up just doing double what it did when it closed down, we're doing really well. And so we ended up opening it up in 2002 and we did like 6 times the sales that we anticipated.
In Muscatine then.
Yes, we opened the store and we're like, okay, so
people wanted it. Yes. Yeah.
I remember still to this day, we were like, 300 items down, or we were 100 items down for like 4 hours straight. The lobby was just packed with people. And slowly over time, it dwindled its way down. But what in the meantime is after like 3 weeks, I was able to pay off the store I just opened. Mm-hmm. And
the Muscatine store, you were able to pay that off in how many weeks?
Like 3 weeks.
That's amazing.
Because it was, we were doing.
These people talk about like, you need to have 5 years before you are making profit. Like you had it paid off in 3 weeks.
A lot of that is though, because I did a lot of sweat. You know, I really did. I mean, I paid a plumber to come in and do some plumbing work. I played an electrician, but I literally put up the walls. We put up the sheetrock. We put the coverings around it. We laid the tile. We, you know, all the oven was like the most expensive piece, and I got that for really cheap. And so I probably put it together for about half what it would normally cost back then. I mean, we did really well. So,
wow.
And then over time it slowly dwindled down, and it was, I was focusing on, you know, Davenport, and, you know, kind of got a little bit difficult having two locations, you know, just because it's,
yeah, double the work.
So basically I most people say in Domino's is it's like having, if you have one child, it's easy. Okay. Cause you have two parents, one child. Having two kids, now you have one child, you know, one parent.
One parent.
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
Once you exceed that, now you're outnumbered. That's when it gets really tricky. And so we got there eventually, but what ended up happening is I started making enough money. I could take that money, start putting it towards advertising more in Davenport. And I just feel like the way that I ran the business, because I knew the business, you know, was able to just continue upward. And we did school lunches and stuff like that, which is, it's not a very, it's profitable, but yet.
Yeah, your margins are less,
very,
I assume.
Very,
yeah.
Very small. Yeah. But you're doing a lot of pizzas. When you're doing the whole city of Davenport with all the schools, it was a lot of pizzas, 250 pizzas in the morning. And that's, you know, it's quite a bit of pizzas. So of course my wife learned how to make pizzas then. It's like, hey, come on in, help us out, you know? So, she did that. And,
was she stretching the dough in the back? She was, seeing how far it can go.
She was, fortunately for us, we do not have to make our own dough. We just have to stretch it. It never comes frozen.
Okay.
We get a dough ball that comes in that's the size of your fist. And then, you know, a couple of days later, it's two times that size. And we take that and then we stretch it out to the size of the pizza screen. And, of course, there's different dough weights for each dough, whether small, medium, or large, or extra large, whatever. But, so I ended up 2 years down the road, we were like, the lawsuit was coming to a head. It was like, the owner said, you know, we're like, okay, well, here's what we can do. I'll give you all your money that you put into it back to you. And basically you give me the store back. My wife and I are sitting there crying. We're like, geez, you know, we just spent the last 2 years
building
blood, sweat, and tears.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is the best we're going to get. And we're like, no, we've worked this hard to just give it back. So basically at that point, we just ended the lawsuit and just kind of parted ways and just said, okay, whatever. I mean, it is what it is. And can't really say I learned my lesson, but I mean, Domino's wasn't going to help me. I went to them and said, here's what happened. They're like, well, you should do your due diligence. I said, I did, you know. Not only I did, but a buddy of mine was there with me. So they really, once I realized they weren't going to help or anything, then it was like, whatever, it is what it is.
I feel like so many times in business, though, you learn something big like that. Unfortunately, usually it's a negative where you're like, okay, and not necessarily learned a lesson, but you go through something where you're like, I didn't expect it. There's nothing I could do to have really changed it. And you have to kind of take it and just pivot.
Yeah. I mean, and it just, like I said, just keeping the hard work. I feel like there was a guy that franchised the same time as I did in Minnesota. And he actually stayed in Minnesota, opened a business there, a Domino's. And I remember he was a supervisor for another Domino's. And all the guys that ever came to work for me as like a assistant manager or manager from them, I'm like, they don't know how to run food and labor. And I think part of it, what it was, is from what I understand is back then, Domino's was basically the only delivery company back then in the like late 80s, early 90s. Pizza Hut started delivering around in right around 90 or something like that. But so they were, the franchisees were doing well at the time. And so I feel like they were doing so well that they weren't really watching their costs as much as they probably had to. And so the supervisor, they weren't really expected to run the food costs that, you know, food and labor costs that you needed to. And I found out, you know, later on that he didn't know how to run food and labor when he opened his own place. And he was never able to make it just because he couldn't run his costs. And I just remember him like putting a thing out. Hey, how do you guys run your food and labor? I'm like, you have to really work hard at it. It's like, you know, the other term in Domino's besides having sauce in your veins is slash and burn. Slash and burn is like basically get rid of your people until your arms are burning because you're slapping the pizza so much, you know. And, you know, it's true. I mean, you're slapping pizzas back then and your arms were on fire because you were just doing so many. And, but that was the way to save, you know.
So you're never
labor.
Overstaffed, basically.
Yeah, you're always were trying to run as tight a numbers as you could. And being a GM wasn't a traditional, hey, sit in the office. This was hands-on, 100%. You know, there was, you know, I worked 50 hours a week, every week. And if I didn't, if I worked 49.75, I'd get a little message that came across my beeper back then. It was like 49.75. And I'd be like, okay, so in other words, I didn't work my 50 hours.
In other words, get back in there.
So it was more kidding with him, but you know, cause I ran my numbers that he wanted me to do. And, it was funny, but, It's a business that if you don't know how to run them as a GM, it's going to be hard to succeed as a franchisee. And like I said, you could only be a franchisee if you successfully run a Domino's.
Which I think is interesting. I think people think becoming a franchisee is the money part of it, right? You have to have the money, but that's maybe not necessarily the case, depending on what franchise it is.
Well, I mean, it all depends back then on what kind of volume of sales you're trying to purchase. I actually went to try to go big. Yep. I wanted to go big at the time. Back then, $18,000 a week was like, wow, back in 2000, that was top dollar back then per week for sales for Domino's. And so then I was going to be paying a lot of money for this place, but I had the confidence that I was running the highest volume store for the guy I was working for. So this isn't going to be hard for me. I already know how to do this. And so, I mean, the money aspect in it, you know, like the franchise fee was $1,500. So I had to give them $1,500 to be able to get basically a Domino's franchise license.
Okay.
Right now it's up to 10,000. So it's still reasonable 23 years later.
So 10,000 gives you the license, but then to actually purchase one.
Yeah, then
that look like?
You have a couple different options. You could either build one.
Okay.
Because there's still a lot of location or spaces that they call green space that they want to put stores.
Does a franchise have to approve your location, by the way?
Yes. Just
a quick question. Okay.
Yeah, they
like you have to say there's this much traffic that goes through it or...
You know, actually, they've done a fantastic job because I have opened from 2017 to... Just when COVID ended, I opened 6 stores.
I was going to ask you how many you have. So
yeah,
how many?
I have 8.
You have 8. Okay.
And so I built 6 from ground up.
Okay.
During COVID, which was not easy.
No.
At that point, I hung up the contractor shoes and let actual contractor do it because I was
You get to a certain point
busy.
Where you're like, okay.
But it was fun. It was kind of interesting, you know, actually doing the plans, because when I did my store in Muscatine, Domino's back then was so much easier. I drew it up, my plans on a piece of paper and submitted to them. I said, this is what it's going to look like. And so, but now it's like, you have to get the architectural plans, you have to get everything. And it's way more intense. And I think my architectural plans were more than I paid for my oven back in Muscatine. But yeah, so they basically came to me and said, hey, you know, we want to see you grow. You're a good franchisee. And, you know, where would you like to build? We've got 25 locations within, you know, 100 miles of here. And what they do is they call them the Sims report. They basically take the population, they take and break it down by ethnic group, everything that they can. And they basically say, this is what a similar store in wherever, United States, is doing with a similar, you know, population, everything else. And then so they call it their Sims report. And so they give you a projection of what you think you should do. They're spot on. It's pretty amazing. And it kind of, I mean, so much so that when I was working with you guys, I would give that to Nick and I'd say, here's a projection for, you know, this next location. And I think he was like, hey, you know, this is, your guys' projections are right on. And so it was easier for me to, you know, go to you guys and say, hey, can I get money to get another store going and such. So, yeah, they've been really, really accurate with that. The only store that has been lower than projected was Eldridge.
Oh.
And my feeling was, is that they took the market. They didn't anticipate that Papa John's would be delivering from Davenport to Eldridge. And I think that's part of the equation.
Got it.
I'm not saying that's the full equation, but that's the only store that's doing less than projected. All the rest of them are doing either the same or better than they projected.
Than what they projected.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's good. I mean, and they do that for all locations. And it's kind of nice to know, like, oh, okay, you're going to open a store and you're going to do X amount, you know? So,
yeah, I feel like so many startups would love to have somebody say, hey, here's how much we think you're going to make, because that can be the hardest part of, you know, investing in something and
well, for sure.
It from
I mean,
scratch.
It's the idea that the unknown.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's what scares people away from even going to franchise. I've wanted to definitely have people franchise from underneath me to have the opportunity. That's every day I say to people, or not every day, but I tell people, hey, you know what? I will give you the path to go in the same direction I did if you choose to. I said, it's all right in here. That, you know,
in your heart,
in your heart is what it's going to take. It's going to take hard work. It's going to take dedication. You know, it's going to take, you know,
time and effort.
It's going to take time.
Yeah.
Sauce in the veins.
Yeah. It's sauce in the veins. It's one of those things where, you know, it's not hard to do. If you do it well, Domino's will say, go ahead and do it. And I really like that, because you see a lot of other business models out there that attorneys, doctors, they buy into. They have no idea how to run a Domino's. That's why they don't want them running it. You know, they have money to invest, but they don't really know how to run it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of concepts that have been out there that, you know, Quiznos is one. I used to love going to Quiznos, but yet they allowed everybody and their uncle to buy into them, but they didn't know how to run them.
How interesting.
So Scott, tell us a little bit more about the partnership you have with Domino's as the corporate entity. Like, you're a franchisee, they're the parent. We've heard some pros. We've heard some, like, they didn't do a lot during the initial dispute with the original owner here in the Quad Cities. But tell us a little bit about, like, that. And I remember several years ago, Domino's did a big corporate branding, like, redo the recipe. And talk about how much latitude you have as an individual operator versus the cards you're dealt with from them, if you will.
Also, if I could just add on that question, what does it look like? Do you still pay them each year? How does that work as a franchisee?
So, yeah, I do pay 10% royalties every week. It's advertising and royalties.
Yep.
And as you can see, we're on TV quite a bit. But that TV piece is kind of interesting, because a lot of people, and I'll get to your question in a second here, is if you watch TV commercials, and which everybody does, and you see places that are trying to, like, do gimmicky things. I will use Pizza Hut, because they're notorious for hot dogs in their crust, or they're doing this or doing that. That's just a ploy to get the phones to ring. That, I mean, Domino's has not And that's what they call a limited time offer. Oh, get it now. It's a limited time offer. Anytime you see a company doing that, they're definitely struggling. They need it. We haven't done a limited time offer probably in over 10 years. Everything that they've come out with has stuck. I take that back to a certain degree. Like our artisans we had for about 2 or 3 years, our artisan pizza. And eventually, if it's not selling to what they want to, they'll pull it.
Sure, but that's just...
But yeah, it wasn't like, hey, we're running this for two... Testing. We're not running this for 8 weeks and then we're going to, you know, pull it out, you know. And there's a lot of people will say, oh gosh, I miss your kickers you guys had. I miss your cheesy dots you had and all these things that we did years ago. And, but yeah, it's interesting that when you watch TV and you see these limited time offers that, that you can tell that the competition is really, you know, having a hard time. Now we do like a 50% off, but a lot of that is more so as, hey, you're maybe not a Domino's fan, but we're going to give you 50% off this week. Hopefully you'll come try us and then you'll become a Domino's fan. So they do it. They don't do it because they're really hurting for sales.
Right.
Because it's not an easy week for us. It's a very, very busy week. It's just to try and gain more customers. So, but as far as Domino's goes, they pretty much, you have to run a pretty tight ship for them. You know, they do unannounced audits. They make sure that you're, you know, running a very clean, very, you know, they want to have their numbers in line. They have access to our computer systems. They can see what's going on. They, you know, they pretty much are kind of overseeing us. As far as like taco pizza, let's use that example. Taco pizza is huge.
Love taco pizza.
In this market. Well, when I first got here, the previous 6 years as being a general manager in Minneapolis, I had one person ask me for taco pizza. One.
Not so, Minnesota.
Yeah. So I came down. The very first shift, I see the taco pizza stuff there. I'm like walking into the store, the chips and all this other stuff. I'm like, taco pizza is going to be done after today in this store because I'm just going to get rid of it. Because I'm like, who's going to ask for taco pizza? Had no idea. Had no idea. I'm like, nobody asked for taco pizza.
It's like a whole different culture.
Well, let's just say by halfway through the shift, I realized that we are keeping taco pizza.
Yeah, we're going to order another bag of chips.
I did have the ability, and this is asking what I can and can't do. I did have the ability to remove sardines from the... Yes, I was like, I am not.
Was that really on the?
Yes, it was on the menu. Yeah, we had it.
Wow.
I was like, no.
Sardines.
I am not. I do not want to do that. I can't stand it. No. The smell. It's terrible. I got rid of them. I'm like, okay. You know, I felt like I had a little bit of power.
You didn't have like a riot outside that you got rid of your sardines?
No. I did have people call on there and say, hey, can we put... I'm like, nope, we don't have any.
What?
You don't have that? Yeah, we don't. No. Nope, sorry. So taco pizza stuck around. The thing was is that I became familiar with how important it was. But it was kind of being made... I can't see... It was being made like a taco pizza... people would want to eat in the Quad Cities, but it wasn't necessarily Domino's approved taco pizza. It was kind of Domino's Iowa taco pizza.
No.
So as they became more and more involved, they came back to us and said, no, you can't make taco pizza this way. So, we'll let you make taco pizza. And we, you know, and we said, you know, our competitors are selling it. We need to be competitive. So they came back with us to us and they said, well, here's how you can make a taco pizza. And it was just like, they wanted us to send a bag of lettuce, a couple bags of chips. So that way, you know, when the pizza got to the customer's house, they had to put it on there. And
you know, I feel like in college, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure in college there was a night where we ordered Domino's, obviously. And I remember it all coming in separate things. Being like, what is going on?
Yep.
Yeah.
And so we sent out a 8 ounce bag of lettuce, enough for like a 3 taco pizzas and 2 bags of Dorito chips. And that's the way we were supposed to do it. But it was all based on
every college kid's eating deconstructed.
It was all based on basically it was all based on just cross contamination. They didn't want us to touch the product after it came out of the oven.
Yep.
You know, and Domino's really was, you know, big on that. Hey, we don't want you to. Yeah, we can tell you to put gloves on, but we just don't want to touch. We don't want to be involved with that. And so here's the way you can do it. And all the franchisees that were in the state of Iowa were like, this is terrible. Nobody's going to want this. And so all of a sudden, our taco pizza sales dropped. And then they came back to us a year later and say, well, see, you guys aren't selling any taco pizzas. We're like, oh, no. Of course we're
well, not.
Not
when you send a bag of lettuce. Yeah.
You know, and you change the way. I mean, we were making it with bean sauce before. And now it's just pizza sauce, basically. I'm like, yeah, you guys basically, you know, you dealt out us a hand that we had no chance. And so it was kind of like, all right, well, I guess we'll just survive without taco pizza. And the other thing we had before was sauerkraut. And sauerkraut wasn't necessarily an approved. They sold it to us. It was funny. We bought it from them, but it wasn't an approved topping. So it's like, okay, this doesn't make sense. We buy all of our product from you, Domino's. We literally cannot buy anything from the grocery store. It's from them. Everything comes from them.
Okay.
And so, like, we bought the sauerkraut. But every time the auditor came through, they'd mark us for unapproved product.
So, like, why are you selling it?
Yeah, exactly. So eventually they caught wind and they stopped selling it. Well, then, you know, I had people that ordered ham and sauerkraut pizza. It was pretty big. And so I ended up having to go to the store. I'm like, what's the difference between Hy-Vee, sauerkraut, and Domino's? Nothing. So eventually it got to a point where they came down pretty hard and said, we catch you selling this again, we may pull your contract.
Wow.
Yes. So I was like, all right, sauerkraut, have to let you go now. So, I mean, they can be pretty.
So do you sell taco pizza?
Well, it's kind of interesting is they brought back a chicken taco and a cheeseburger pizza.
Oh, cheeseburger pizza.
During COVID. Yeah. Because their idea was, and this wasn't meant to be a limited time thing, is tacos and burgers were being delivered by, you know, all these aggregators, you know, Uber Eats and all these other places. And they're like, the product that you get as a, from a taco and a burger after it's been sitting around for a while waiting to be delivered
not
is not going to be as good.
It's not great.
So their idea was, hey, let's make a chicken taco pizza and a we had a cheeseburger pizza before, and we'll advertise that, hey, you can get tacos and cheeseburger from us and we'll deliver it fast. And it was actually a chicken taco was pretty decent. It was different, but it was decent. We sold a lot of them. And I don't know, about after about 2 years, they decided that they just said it wasn't selling at the rate they once again wanted to do. And they had to bring extra SKUs, they call it, extra, you know, things in for us to make these. And they're like, well, we want to make it easier for you. So we're just going to discontinue that. So they periodically will discontinue things, and, you know, but for the most part, it's pretty standard. The only thing I can advertise every single day of the year. I could sell my pizzas for $1.99 if I wanted to. It wouldn't be very smart. So I do have the ability to price whatever I price my stuff at. But as far as creating a taco pizza or doing anything like that, no. They will not. You have to get a variance for something. And, taco pizza is not one they're going to give us.
So that's nice, though, because with the franchise, you get the support, you know, you get the advertising, you get the branding, you get all of these things that you don't get with a startup. But you have to deal with a few things where it's like, hey, this is selling really well, and they just pulled it from me. So it's pros and cons, I'm sure, throughout the process.
For the most part, I would agree that, like, when they pull something, it's probably a product that, you know, it's not going to affect you by them pulling it. So they were the last pizza company to actually, we just started doing Uber Eats, and they were the last company to get on board. They did not want, you know, Papa John's does it. They do DoorDash. They don't want an outside person coming in and taking our pizza and delivering it to somebody.
They want control over the fact that, like, we want it to come to you to the door still in good tact.
So basically, they went to Uber and they said, if you want to partner with us, we deliver the product. Nobody comes in. Our delivery drivers that we hired, that we vetted out, basically are going to deliver that product. They can order on Uber Eats, but our drivers but are going to deliver.
Interesting.
Well, that's a nice, yeah.
And so that's what we just started. Basically, we just rolled it out. I mean, nationwide, it's like within, I think I had a couple stores just go live last week. And
oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, it's just basically, it's just going live basically throughout the whole United States. It's still rolling out. There's probably some markets that haven't hit it, but I think it's pretty much just rolled out nationwide. So it doesn't look any different to us when we get the order. The only way we can tell it's an Uber order is the fact that, and this is the technology piece that's an absolute amazing, is that when you go online to place an order, because we do probably about 90% online orders now, it's pretty high. Once somebody goes into there, puts something into their shopping cart, we immediately see that on our screen. So we can actually start making that product. And from scratch, you know, we see it. You got a pepperoni in there. You got a pepperoni mushroom, half this, half that. We see it. We can start making that product. If we choose to, we can actually take that entire order. Say it's two pizzas. We could literally make those two pizzas, put them in the oven, and maybe you're trying to find a credit card or maybe you're trying to decide on something else. We can put that through the oven. It literally, by the time you hit send on there and it actually the clock start ticking on your end, we conceivably could have it like ready to walk out the door.
Wow.
And so Ubers, we don't get that heads up. It just comes directly from Uber right to our make line.
So there is
no
longer.
Yeah, there is no, we can't jump the order per se, but that's how we can get a pizza to you guys. And honestly, the fastest I've seen us get a pizza to somebody was in like 9 minutes.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
I can attest in our house, we've seen pizzas in under 15 minutes. So.
It can happen. It can happen.
When you got little kids, that's super
exactly.
important.
It's,
I mean, and people are like, well, do you just give us one that was already made or something? Like, no, you guys order it how you want to. So, there's a lot of stores that are delivering pizzas in on average 17 minutes.
Wow.
That's pretty darn quick to have to cook it.
Oh, that's amazing.
So it's the technology's there. They're like I said, they're staying way ahead of everybody.
Well,
so,
and just such good support, it sounds like.
It is. I mean, they're there to help you. Not when it comes to, you know, it's, I guess you could say stupid things, but I mean, it kind of ironically to this whole thing about me buying the store and having, well, I started taking orders that were not in my area. I'm like, okay, well, forget this, man. This customer has been in here. You can see that they've ordered like 2 weeks before I bought the store, and they ordered 2 weeks before that, 2 weeks before that, because the system would show us that. And so they started calling in, and I'm like, fine, I'm just going to start taking these. Well, he kept somebody there that was kind of keeping an eye on it. Well, sure enough, about a month later, I get a default letter from corporate saying, stop delivering into your other guy's area. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Now you're going to tell me that I'm in default?
Now because, you're going to check? Yeah.
Yeah, now you're going to. Yeah. They literally came in and did an audit on my computer and saw it. And they said, well, you do this again. Your contract's in, you know, up for. So they can be pretty, pretty tough if they want, which is fine. I think it's just a good thing for the integrity of the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
I think they probably have to be.
I mean, and I don't know from other companies and stuff, but yeah, they definitely, you know, they definitely watch over things.
So first of all, this has been such an amazing story just to go from a slinger to owning 8 stores. It's really an incredible journey. So my last question on all of my podcasts, unless Gabe, you have anything else.
No, go ahead.
No, is what advice do you have for someone else that's going through, whether they're starting it from scratch or they're going through a franchise? Obviously, you've learned so much. You have challenges. You have opportunities. What's your like number one piece of advice?
So I actually have somebody that's working for me, young kid, very, very good kid. I mean, he's got it all together. He wants to own his own, open his own pizza place. And I've sat down with him a few times and I just said, hey, you know, I'm going to tell you the pros and cons. I said, I'm going to tell you how hard it is to open your own business from scratch. That is Tim's Pizza, let's just say. Just by the sake of what Domino's does to help you through the process. Now, obviously, after I built like my third store, I was like, I don't need your help, guys. Thanks. But, you know, I'll just meet my deadlines of when you want me to send you the information. And, but yeah, I mean, it took me three solid stores just to kind of like understand how just meeting deadlines and stuff. It's not so much as the deadlines, it's just building a store to the health department specs to everything else, right? You just wouldn't know that as an individual trying to build a business. It's definitely something that, you know, with them having them to, you know, use as a sounding board is huge. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to Sims reports. I mean, that's huge too. I mean, if you knew that like you were going to be able to open a business that was going to do that amount of money, it's like, sign me up.
Right.
You know?
Right. Most people will be like, great, awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm in. And so when you try and build your own place, you have no idea that the emotions that would go through you. I can only imagine. I was still even anxious opening my store in Cedar Rapids because it was only my second store that was simming for me. And I'm like, is it going to actually be accurate like the first one? Because it still was out there.
It's all a risk.
And so yeah. I was very, very nervous back then. And so honestly, you know, I try and tell people all the time, you know, that's one thing I did advertise for a while there. Hey, come aboard, be your own owner. I think so many people feel like you have to have so much liquid money. They don't understand that Domino's really wants to let the guy that worked his butt off, you know, mm-hmm. and franchise. And we will let you do that at a very inexpensive rate. You know, it's going to cost you $250,000 probably for a franchise fee at McDonald's. Who's going to have that just as a general manager? They're not. And so that's why they don't let anybody else outside the company do that, is they want to really, really, you know, let that little guy become the owner. And that's kind of where what happened with me basically is the little guy was able to open another store. And I'd like to see where I want to help people franchise, because I understand that the guy that has 50 stores probably wants to go to 60. I'd rather sell one of my stores to somebody that has no stores than to somebody that has a lot of stores, because I want to give that person an opportunity to, you know, experience what I experienced. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. It's a little bit more greedy. I want to get, you know, more stores. And so I actually have two of my stores that are available for sale just because they're further away from me. And mm-hmm. I got some guys that are going to buy one of my stores, and another person that works for another Domino's franchise that has reached out to me and asked me if I, you know, still going to be selling the other one. I'm just like, I just want to downsize a little bit just so that way I'm a little bit more compact, but yet still be doing just fine.
Yeah. So anyone working at Domino's right now, if you're looking to buy your first store, we have a gentleman for you to talk to. But no, Scott, this was honestly really wonderful. And we just really appreciate you being on our podcast today.
Oh, it was great. I had fun.
Thank you so much.
This interview was brought to you by Fortress Bank, here for you when you're ready to take your business to the next level.
Find out more about the way Fortress grows businesses at www.bankfortress.com.